Hello, neighbours. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 32 of season 2. I'm never surprised by the findings that, all other things being equal, gardeners live longer than non-gardeners. Sure, we all know that growing some of our own food and being around plants in general is good for our health, not just because of the fresh and nutritious produce we get, but it goes much farther than that. Connecting with nature through food growing and collecting, it's a form of therapy. In our age of anxiety, amplified by a global pandemic and a merciless social mediascape, we are relearning the value of just being outside. The value of participating with nature, watching it closely, nudging it occasionally. Gardening has many benefits, but therapy is clearly near the top of the list. Today, we talk about how deepening our relationship to nature is good for our body, our mind, and our soul.
Practice where you are tending to life that's not your own, something outside yourself. You're really connecting with the broader scope of life, the bigger picture outside yourself. I think the longer and the longer that we are generations of people disconnected to land, we are going to continue to see our mental health numbers rise. The number of people suffering from anxiety and depression, especially among young people, is really high. And I truly believe that it's because they are probably the third generation out now that has no connection to land.
Natalie Bousted knows the area of therapeutic horticulture very well. She studied in the area and has put that knowledge into practice. A while back, I caught up with her at Cam H's Therapy Garden and Greenhouse, where she was the manager. Cam H stands for the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. It's Canada's largest mental health teaching hospital. Its main location is in downtown Toronto, on a sprawling campus on Queen Street West. It's a hive of buildings and activities with constant construction in the background, and in the midst of all this, a community garden and a year-round greenhouse. By the way, the garden was Canada's first ever market garden on hospital grounds. The project is a collaboration between CAMH and FoodShare. Don't worry about the noise. We'll take a little alleyway off of Queen Street called White Squirrel Way. It's where nature begins and sprawl withdraws just a bit. Join us. Tell me a bit about this place. We're in a greenhouse right now. You have a garden next. When did it start?
FoodShare and CAMH have had this partnership for about almost 20 years, 2002. And so the site has looked different. It's been in different locations across the CAMH site. This garden has been in place as it stands now for about 7 years. But, you know, in the next decade or so, again, unsure in urban development world what's going to happen to it. But as of now, it is something that they've preserved and want to keep.
Yeah. And the fact that they put a greenhouse up close to it, does that mean they're committed to this?
Yes. So, I mean, this was a huge investment by CAMH on their part, which it was finally built last year after years of negotiation and design. So the greenhouse we're in is about $250,000. So it is state of the art. It's got lots of things that make it look a little bit like a spaceship, and everything's automated. So that's a huge investment on CAMH's part, that they're committed to garden therapy and plant therapy as a part of what they offer to their clients, and that this really shows that.
So the Center for Addiction and Mental Health is investing in gardens. So, is this a relatively recent development in mental health and addiction?
I think we've known for a really long time on some levels that plants and gardening are therapeutic and that nature is important. I think the rise in the almost global panic around climate change and around us really deeply needing to pay attention to the earth, I think has put a focus on garden therapy and nature therapy in a huge way, as we recognize that we may be losing it. And we may be coming to a point where we don't have as much access to it, or it is on the brink of collapse. There's a lot more people interested in not only preserving it, but recognizing its value, its inherent value.
What is it about gardening that connects us with something that we couldn't otherwise connect with?
Any practice where you are tending to life that's not your own, something outside yourself, especially, you know, interspecies, where you're tending to plants or animals, you're really connecting with the broader scope of life and the bigger picture outside yourself. Also, I can't name a study, so forgive me, but these are things that I've heard and know to be true for the decade I've been working in this industry. We're all vibrating at different frequencies. All of us are little particles moving around, and plants are vibrating at a much lower frequency than us. And so being around plants actually impacts our frequency that we're vibrating at, and it lowers it. And when we're stressed, our vibrations go up. When we're in city spaces where there's lots lots of noise, those vibrations are quite intense, and that causes stress inside the body, even if we're just walking down the street. So being in nature, being in quiet, being in place where there's vibrations are lower, that actually is healing to our body on a cellular level.
And that would be why a Center for Addiction and Mental Health would be interested in getting people involved in this, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah, because it's not even about the skill sets you're learning, even though that is empowering in and of itself to grow your own food. Amazing, right? To see that process happen. But just literally standing around with plants is doing something to you at a cellular level. So you don't have to do anything in the garden other than stand in it to actually get some benefit, which is amazing.
I suppose scientists would even study the vibrations of different plants, and some would be even more therapeutic than others. Is that true?
Yes, and also thinking about the fact that different plants are giving off different scents as well. And so, you know, aromatherapy is huge. A lot of people are paying a lot of money for these little scented oils that they can put in their houses, but you go stand by a pine tree or in a grove of cedars and you're getting that immediately, right? Yeah. So not only are you getting the vibration, you're actually, the other senses are being impacted. And you even look to color theory. So certain colors make us feel calm, and green is one of the main things that makes us feel calm in terms of color. And it makes sense. That's where we actually feel our belongings. As humans, that's where we spent most of the millennia of our existence on this planet.
About a block away from here, there are lots of stores selling expensive aromatherapy. So you should just come down here to the garden.
That's it. Yes. You know, just rub some lavender that we've got going on, or, you know, taste some sage, all that stuff. It's a full sensory experience.
Do you see in some of the people who come and garden, do you see those sorts of changes over time, that it sort of changes their vibration level or whatever?
Yeah. Certainly people who have come here and are dedicated to coming here, the clients who benefit from this are people who really understand the benefit of plants and just love plants deeply and love gardening deeply. They may have been people in a former phase of life who had access to land and now do not. They may be people who are interested in propagating plants in the greenhouse. They love house plants and they know all the varieties. They get a lot out of that. And there's other people who love getting their hands dirty in the soil. Even week to week, people say this is the best part of their week. The greenhouse is their favorite place on earth. Like, these are the sentences I hear all the time, you know. So it's very clear that the people who gravitated towards this as a version of therapy for themselves really love it and really see how it impacts their life.
Yeah. So the people who work here or are present here choose it.
Occupational therapists or recreational therapists, other kinds of therapists on site know about the garden and will recommend it to clients they think might be a good fit, and they can decide. But a lot of times clients just see it. They see the garden. Right. They see us out there. They come say hi and they say, you know, what's this? And then they ask their therapist about it. So a lot of the people who are here are deeply self-directed and have made that choice really actively.
Do you have a piece of music I can use somewhere in here that you hum or you listen to?
Oh, interesting. We listen to a lot of 1970s classics, some Elton John or some Fleetwood Mac. A lot of folks here are of a certain age, and so when we do listen to music, I try to make it something that they, Jefferson Starship, whatever it is. So anything in that realm is kind of the vibe that ends up in here a lot of the times.
Maybe it affects the plants in some way, though. Yeah. The vibration that they're at, the music.
That's so true. I actually haven't ever done those experiments, like where people play certain music and see what happens. But again, because we're all vibrating, those are really great experiments to be like, oh, when I play Metallica, you know, my plant dies, and when I play Chopin, yes, that's right. You know, we need those vibrational energies to calm our systems down, and plants need it too.
It's interesting. So many dairy farmers have music on for their cattle, or used to, back
in
the day.
Yeah, that's fun.
Not just to keep themselves company. Do greenhouses generally have music playing?
Not all the time. I mean, we do a lot of just chit-chatting. If I'm alone here, certainly I'll be probably singing out loud to my Chantal Kreviazik or whatever I like, my favorite. But we don't have speakers in here that are blasting music. We just kind of have a little speaker sometimes. So most of the time, these guys are pretty peaceful. Sometimes I think about what my plants in the garden must be doing or feeling based on the fact that there's construction noise all the time, every day of their little lives. So I haven't seen anything, you know, nothing's not grown, but I bet that they're impacted.
Well, the peppers this year.
The peppers, yes. Oh, don't talk to me.
It's the jackhammer disease.
Yes, that's it. They couldn't make it. I don't know. I believe it.
All the times have come to put a spell on. She's the witch queen of New Orleans.
And the things you say, you took me in your hands like a piece of clay. You made me a man, now I'm proud to say, hallelujah.
a mix of 1970s hits, songs you may hear at the CAMH Greenhouse at certain times, as suggested by my guest today, Natalie Boustead. We're talking about the many upsides of growing your own food and connecting with plants. Let's head back to the greenhouse. We haven't really mentioned the term therapeutic horticulture. That's something that I heard you talk about a couple of months ago during a tour. What is it exactly?
Horticultural therapy, which there's lots of different kinds of trainings you can take. Traditionally, in at least Western culture, what we've thought about horticulture therapy as being is activities really directed to folks who have limited mobility or elderly people. Okay. So it's about getting people's senses stimulated, touch, sound, taste, smell, sight, and doing that however you can, understanding that nature offers all of those benefits for sensory stimulation, and that plants really provide a gentle, calm activity for people to connect with, especially in elderly care homes, is really where horticulture therapy has been most focused on. But bringing horticulture therapy into a more modern context and recognizing that being around plants is good for everyone, it's not just going into an elderly patient's space with some herbs and everyone touching it, but it's like every person at every stage of life needs nature connection. And so what does that look like? For us here at CAMH, the program that I'm running here, a lot of what we're doing is literally just the act of gardening itself. So just growing a full season of vegetables, and every day there's something different to do. And at every stage of the game, there's something to appreciate and to value. I don't have to make up a special activity in order to foster that relationship to the plants and the land. I don't have to be like, okay, I need tools, or we're going to plant ivy and make it go around this curved wire heart, which is, you know, an activity I learned in my horticulture therapy class. And I was like, this is great, but we don't have to make anything up. Just tending to plants and making sure that their needs are being met in different phases of life throughout the season, that's enough.
So essentially, the garden gives you your lesson plans.
That's right. The garden, you know, just every day I come here early, I just take a walk around and I look at what needs to happen. I see which plants are telling us they need support. You know, I make those plans day to day based on, you know, did it rain last night? What's that going to mean? So it's not that I have these like set lesson plans happening, but I'm just seeing what nature is providing for us, and then we just do that thing.
Yeah. What kind of vegetables do you do in the garden and flowers?
So we grow a full spectrum of organic vegetables throughout the season. So starting in late April and ending in November, that's kind of our full season. So all the things you'd expect, all the root veggies, beets, carrots, parsnips. We have lots of different kinds of berries, actually, which I'm excited about. So we have strawberries and raspberries and blackberries, service berries, hascap berries, gooseberries, blueberries, elderberries. So berries is a huge thing, and berries provides, you know, both fruit for us and for birds. And so we're making sure that whatever we're growing in the garden, it's not just for human consumption, that there are things in that garden that other wildlife can enjoy. Last year, one full bed we took over as a perennial flower garden, and all of the flowers that are in there either have medicinal properties or are extremely pollinator friendly, or both. And so we make sure that the pollinators in the garden have something to feed on all year round, because they're helping us. We need them. So there was no specific flower garden in the Sunshine Garden until last year, and I said, we got to change that. We have to put some perennials in. We have to make sure there's areas that are not just for lettuce and kale and tomatoes. Like, we need those pollinators to be fed.
And what happens to the vegetables?
So the vegetables go into a weekly farmer's market.
Oh, great.
So we have a farmer's market on site here. So it's Thursdays from 11 to 1 throughout the growing season. So the clients come, the clients that are interested, not everybody cares about selling food to the general public. That's fine. Yeah. But the clients who do like interacting with the public, they get to learn about those skills that go into selling and showcasing the produce, and they get a kick out of it. There's clients that really, really love to do that. So, and just this year, we doubled the amount of money we made from last year, and that was wonderful.
Hold your head up, hold your head.
That was a mashup of 1970s hit songs, as suggested by my guest today, in honor of the folks she works with in the Center for Addiction and Mental Health Greenhouse and Garden. We're talking about therapeutic horticulture. Maybe doctors will soon take the research seriously and start prescribing gardening to some of their patients. They'd advise, plant two raised beds and call me in the fall.
In the greenhouse here, though, you have a lot of ornamentals and other kinds of, not just
yes.
human edibles or whatever?
Yes.
I mean, maybe these are edible, too.
No. These are mostly houseplants. So because we run full year programming, we have a pretty rigorous houseplant program that we have in here where we do propagation of houseplants. We take donations from florists and other organizations that maybe have some leftover. For example, mm-hmm. we have this whole row of orchids here that's just coming into bloom. And these were donated by a florist or for an installation. They cut all the flowers off, but the stems are still good. They don't have room to take care of that, so they gave them to us. And so we sell those. And a lot of this stuff also comes from, like, just cuttings and propagations from existing plants. So what we do in the wintertime and in the springtime is we'll have houseplant sales for the general public in CAMH. And that makes us quite a bit of revenue for our program. And that's something also new that we weren't doing before because we didn't have a year-round greenhouse. Yeah. So now it's like, what do we do in the greenhouse throughout the winter? Well, you know, we can definitely take houseplants and keep them alive. Yeah. And we also grow ornamental flowers like hyacinths in the springtime, and we do a big hyacinth sale. And so in the spring, this whole greenhouse smells like hyacinth, and it's just delightful.
Yeah. I think when I was here before, you had some unusual kinds of vegetables or whatever, or like avocado or something like that.
Yeah.
Sort of experiment with things?
Yeah. So we have a partnership with the cafeteria here on site at CAMH. So every week we bring bags of compost in, we blend them up, and we give them to our worms. We have some worm bins here, which help to feed our plants with their nutritious vermicompost. And then we'll sift through that compost and we'll see, is there anything we can grow in this compost?
Are there seeds in here?
What's happening? So we have avocados in here. We also have taken some tops of pineapples and started to grow pineapples. Yeah. So you and I are actually sitting next to these beautiful pineapples. Yeah. Pineapples are a two-year plant, so these are year one, and next year they'll probably grow a little pineapple. It's an investment. But it's fun to see, you know, what are we throwing away that actually still has a lot of value, and what could we be doing with it? So that's fun for us.
So in the middle of winter, people are in here, and they're working on things even though there's snow around us.
That's right, so we literally have to dig our way to the greenhouse in the wintertime. So it's nice and toasty in here, though. Again, full season, we have lights that come on. If it's too dark in the winter months, we have the grow lights on. Yeah, we just continue to foster all of our beautiful houseplants that don't get sold at our wintertime market, and we start to gear up towards getting ready for that next season and starting our seedling production. So full-scale seedling production for the growing gardening season with food starts in about mid-February. And so by March, all of our houseplants are sold, and we have thousands of seedlings here that we start for us and for the community.
You're a part of many, many organizations in this area that are doing what we call urban agriculture, I guess, for want of a better term. Are you optimistic about how this has been growing over the last decade or so?
Yeah, I think it's nice to see there's so many avenues for what urban agriculture can look like, and there's so many people using it on so many different scales, and I think it's wonderful. The benefit, I think, of this program that we run is that we're not dependent on how much we produce in order to sustain our garden, and so the stress of some, you know, agriculture can be stressful and meeting deadlines and crop failures. There's so much that happens. As a society, we really just expect everything to run like clockwork. And in reality, nature does whatever it wants. And there's many years where things don't work. So the reason that this program works so well is we're not dependent on those deadlines. We're not dependent on how much food we produce. And that really allows it to actually be therapeutic because many farmers are stressed. You know, they may be like, this is, you know, the industry can be very stressful in and of itself. But to allow a space that can just allow nature to do what it wants, we tend to it. This year we had a lot of big rainfalls, and what that meant was that our pepper plants got a disease that we can't help. There's nothing we could have done. And so, you know, our pepper crop failed, and, you know, we didn't have a contract with Loblaw, so it doesn't matter. But I'm enthusiastic about how many projects are continuing, have been here in Toronto for a long time, and are also just starting. And a lot of cities around the world are really embracing embracing small-scale farming, mm-hmm. small-scale gardening, and urban farming as real viable options for food production, but also as learning and as therapy.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think one of the things that strikes me about the urban agriculture is it's really interested in other ways in which the growing of food assists with decolonization, with therapy, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's something that some farmers understood all along, but it's something that is very evident in
that's
urban
right.
agriculture, I think.
That's yeah. it. Absolutely. Yeah, just having a connection to land in the context of a city is something that is really special. And a lot of people are missing that deep connection to land and to sharing peaceably that land with all of the other beings. And so when you create a space where it's not just about production, it's not just about like an industrial version of what agriculture has become, but it's actually you having a connection to that land and allowing things to thrive and allowing all other beings that are associated with that land to thrive, you really, really change your relationship to everything around you. And you find your place in the larger scheme of what really matters, which is really hard to do when you don't have that land connection and you're not seeing what the land does season to season and you're not seeing all the other beings that are really thriving alongside you in the natural environment.
That was the last of the mélanges of 1970s hits. You may have recognized a few of them. It's the kind of soundtrack that sometimes plays in the greenhouse where my guest today works. Natalie Pousted is the manager of the Sunshine Garden and Greenhouse at the Centre for Addiction and Mental Health in downtown Toronto.
Do people in cities in particular need to be involved in growing things just because you're in this concrete box?
Absolutely, yeah. Again, coming back to those vibrations, mental health has become such a widespread thing. I think we always had mental health issues. It's becoming just easier to talk about. But I think the longer and the longer that we are generations of people disconnected to land, we are going to continue to see our mental health numbers rise. The number of people suffering from anxiety and depression, especially among young people, is really high right now, and I truly believe that it's because they are probably the third generation out now that has no connection to land. If you go two generations, three generations back, at my age, our parents or our grandparents or our great-grandparents were on a farm. So they had that land connection, and they had traumatic lives. They lived through some wars, and all of that stuff is very real, and they also had land connection. So now people go through traumatic events that are still happening, and they don't have land connection. They just don't, for me, my belief is they don't have the opportunity to have that grounding and to have that vibrational energy to slow the vibration in the body and to be connected to the wider purpose. So your whole world just becomes a screen, or your whole world just becomes just what you feel in your body, and you're not connected to everything else that matters. And I think that if we continue that trend, we should not be surprised that our mental health crisis continues to be out of control or seemingly unmanageable.
It sounds the same as farmers who say they need to just stand in a field somewhere with their herd of goats.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even people who are working the land, you know, they're having a stressful time. But also, if we fostered the sense that land is important, agriculture is important, then small-scale agriculture is important, and we valued food and we valued the land, all of our farmers wouldn't have to be working as vigorously and as intensely in order to make ends meet, and they could enjoy their connection to land. Right now, we still have a food system that does not people connected to the land who are growing our food to thrive because we don't value it. Government does not subsidize it. There's so many reasons why even people connected to land are probably more stressed than they were, you know, a couple generations ago when we just had way more farmers to provide, and they didn't have to provide as much, and they got paid more than what they do now for the similar labor.
If you travel to other cities, do you sort of look around for what sort of urban agriculture is happening there? Is there a city that stands out that you think is...
Oh, that's a great... The States is definitely way ahead of us. Yeah. You know,
just in gardens, right?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
They're behind in some many, many ways. In urban agriculture, they definitely have a hand up on us. And I mean, their growing seasons are different. And so they can grow, and the seasons that they can grow in are very different. So that makes a bit of sense. And they also have a lot of cities who have experienced the fallout of a lot of different industries and have been abandoned. So they have actually tons of land to work with. So Detroit is an amazing example. Their urban agriculture is very strong right now. And it's because their economy and their neighborhoods were totally destroyed by the fallout of the car industry and many other things that were happening there. And the housing crisis of 2008 left a lot of kind of mid-scale cities really in ruins. A lot of people fled. There was a lot of empty abandoned space. So that obviously paves the way for people to be able to do urban agriculture projects. And so Detroit's been a really, really amazing example of what's possible when you get creative and you say, we're going to take back that land. Mm-hmm. And New Orleans also is great. Portland has a lot of great stuff going on. But yeah, when I think in my heart about what I'm drawn to or what an amazing vision of the future could be, it is something like Detroit, where they really were a super industrial city and they're really greening it up and really transforming it. Yeah. I think more people are redefining their relationship with what they think Detroit is based on that.
What's your favorite local food?
Like that we can grow? I really love watching peas grow.
Okay.
Peas are probably my favorite. I say they have little Ninja Turtle fingers. They have these little three prongs, and those little prongs kind of search for things to hold on to, and then they grip it, and it's almost like you can see it pulling itself out of the ground in slow motion. And it's just such a delight every time. I never get bored of seeing how it moves and shapes and how it finds something to hold on to and just keep pulling and pulling. So I really love it. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Natalie, for taking time to do this.
Yes, thank you.
All the best in next season.
Yes, I appreciate that so much.
Some folks may snort that gardeners are obsessed with their plots. Well, maybe it's just the gardeners recognize the therapeutic value of working with plants, soil, animals, and weather, working with nature. And it all makes one wonder if the drive toward ever larger operations with fewer and fewer workers per cabbage is ignoring the many other values of growing food. There I am, getting all idealistic again.
We've known for a really long time on some levels that plants and gardening are therapeutic and that nature is important. We'll sift through that compost and we'll see, is there anything we can grow in this compost?
Are there seeds?
Are there seeds in here? What's happening? Aromatherapy is huge. A lot of people are paying a lot of money for these little scented oils that they can put in their houses, but you go stand by a pine tree or in a grove of cedars and you're getting that immediately.
Yeah.
Being in nature, being in quiet, being in place where there's vibrations are lower, that actually is healing to our body on a cellular level.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. On today's show, we heard a whole yaffle of short jags of 1970s hits from bands including... Deep breath here. April Wine, Argent, Bachman Turner Overdrive, Blue Oyster Cult, Boston, David Bowie, Chicago, Edward Bear, Electric Light Orchestra, Five Man Electrical Band, Guess Who, The Knack, Lighthouse, Smash McCann, Mountain, Ram Jam, Rare Earth, Redbone, Stampeder, Steppenwolf, and Sweat Hog. Good luck figuring out which was which. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by Bluegrass Confidential. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
Every person at every stage of life needs nature connection.